Today, we have how advisory boards help family and immigration law firms scale smarter. Running a law firm shouldn't feel like you're trying to coach a championship team all by yourself. Yet, most immigration and family law firm owners are calling every single play without a trusted advisor in the room. Today, we're going to fix that because in this episode, you're going to discover why the fastest growing law firms treat advisory boards like a secret weapon and why yours might be the missing piece between surviving and scaling. You'll learn how an advisory board protects you from blind spots, bad advice, shiny object syndrome, and why boards let you keep full control without giving away equity or partnerships before you're really ready. You'll also get the exact structure, cadence, and NDA protections that you need to run an effective board. You'll find out how to choose the right members, avoid yes people, bring in perspectives that your law firm actually needs, and how to measure success, maintain your focus, and grow as your board grows. And by the end, you'll know exactly how to build the coaching staff that every law firm owner wishes they had.
I'm very excited to be here and we can talk about setting up your board of directors. I can't wait.
Yeah. So our listeners can probably figure out immediately where our paths intersect. So your work as a chief financial officer and mine as a fractional chief marketing officer. So it's really impossible to grow and scale without having a very firm grip on your financials, cash flow, things like that. So we kind of work hand in glove. Let's talk about this idea that I'm a huge fan of. So start off with the type of advisory board that you're recommending.
Yeah. So what I love to see, and this really comes from when I was in Big Four, because I was an auditor. So a lot of times I would have to, you know, we would present, I mean, first you'd have to do the whole recruiting process to recruit a new client. It was always board approval. And then at the end of the audit, we would have to go, the managers would, and the partners would go in to the board meetings and present the audit, you know, the audit report, what we found, what we didn't find that we should have, you know, all those things. And it always intrigued me. Now, when I was an auditor, my primary industry was banking. And I can remember the very, very, very first board meeting I had to attend to present financials. Their board, I think the average age was maybe 85 years old. It was insane. And one guy was literally on an oxygen tank. And I'm like, God love him. But that was like his day to get out of the house every month to come to the board meeting. And I remember thinking, well, this is awesome that they have this wisdom, but it might be a little stale. So, you know, flash forward, you know, that was, you know, 20 some years ago. And I'm now in this position where I see these firms where so often somebody will say to me, oh my gosh, I'm so excited that I found you. I love to sit and talk to you because I feel so alone. And I completely get it, because for me, I mean, my dad was a fireman. He's retired. My mom worked in retail. She's retired. They did not encourage me. I mean, they encouraged me to go to college, but never to be a business owner. That, I mean, when I came home and called and said, hey, guess what? I'm opening a firm. And they're like, no, you're not. What about your health insurance? What about this? And I had no friends that were business owners. So I literally just ventured. It was jumping off a cliff. I mean, I hear some people say, you know, build the plane, or, you know, as you're taking, you know, jumping off the cliff. And I'm like, yep, I did that. And it was lonely for the longest time. And just not having people to turn to for sound advice. And so at some point I started getting to, you know, as you start having the same conversation over and over with other business owners who are like, nobody in my family owns a business. They have no clue what I'm talking about. None of my friends own a business. Or I have friends that are in higher position, like they're VPs of something somewhere, but they still don't get it. And I'm like, yep, I know. I've been there. I was the one, you know, I had a scout for office space, you know, and negotiate the lease. And then Sometimes clean the toilets because who's going to do that, right? Everything. I mean, it's crazy. Picking out a phone system, making decision on a domain. How long did it take you to come up with your domain name, right? And my friends are just like, what are you doing? And so over time, I've evolved to this idea of board of directors does not need to be something that is a Wall Street publicly traded company luxury, I guess, a requirement. I think the more that you can build up, regardless of what size you are, if you can start building up your team as a board of directors that you can bounce ideas off of, it just really will help you propel to the next level in, with your firm.
Yeah. Now, board of directors versus board of advisors, any difference?
Personally, I don't think so. I think it's just what you want to call it. I know I have worked with some nonprofits over the years, and they want to be referred to as board of trustees. They all function the same.
Okay.
It, like in all honesty, anytime and actually right now I'm the treasurer on two nonprofits, so I'm on a board. But that's actually an interesting question. I'm not sure. We just say that we're part of the board. We're officers, and I'm not really sure we distinguish. So. Personally, I don't think there's a difference. It's more about, and I've actually had some people who kind of push back and they're like, yeah, board sounds like too much for me. And I'm like, it's your team. It's your,
Yeah.
think of if you're a sports team, you've got to have your coaching staff. That like this is what we're talking about. You're going to build yourself a little team, and each person is probably never going to always agree, which is actually a good thing. Because a healthy balance of different opinions, you can now take that in, and it's a little filtered because now you're saying, if you would come at things as a marketing, like is this going to be good ad spend?
Yeah.
And then I would look at it and say, well, if we're going to spend 10 grand a month on Google ads, you need to hit this much in your CAC. So. Like there, but there, that's a balance and that's a good thing because now you're starting to see the different viewpoints. Where I see people get off track is, and I see it tons in the tax world. Being a CPA, I see it so much. And I'm sure you see it too with all the, the influencers who are like, oh, buy this Bugatti. You can write it off with your LLC.
Yeah.
And, you hear, one viewpoint. And it's nice to be able to have other people who are like, whoa, time out, where you could step in and say, well, wait a minute, what would you be doing with that Bugatti? Which of course you might want to say, let's feature it in some type of an ad, but just having different viewpoints about one idea. And then that usually spawns another idea. And so it just becomes a healthy breeding ground for our conversation. And I think the biggest piece of it is or at least to me, the biggest advantage, and I don't know what your experience is, but partnerships, they end like no matter what.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that because I have worked with some amazing firms who are, who would not have gotten to where they are without having partners, but that it's handcuffed sometimes, it's marriage, right? And things end where. One thing that I love about having a board of directors is it might help you hang in longer as the only owner of a firm before you really have to bring in a partner for some reason. And your board is going to be, I say it as the opposite of a silent partner. So a silent partner is somebody who hands you money for ownership. They want part of your profit, right? Because it's an investment for them. And then their mom, they say nothing. The opposite is what your board of directors is, non-equity. So nobody, nobody's going, you may pay them depending on what the situation is, but they're not going to be taking, 10% of your profit. Like it's not going to be that type of a relationship. And but then they're going to be the opposite of silent because that's what you have them for, is to have conversations with them. And so there's some pretty amazing conversations that can be had with having your own board set up around you.
So give us a little visualization as to what size your first board could be.
So if you're just starting out, I probably start off with like 3 to 4 people. You don't want it to be too small because if you only have one or two people,
Ooh.
you're probably not getting enough conversation. The more, but you don't want to go too far either. I had somebody that was trying to get like 10, and I'm like, whoa. Now just think about that. You're going to have 10 conversations, not 10 individual conversations, but 10 different viewpoints potentially on anything you have an issue with. And while that's great, sometimes it's too much noise. And that's not the intent. The intent is to, like, we're going to put the earmuffs on. We're trying to focus a little bit. So really, if you're just starting out, three to four, get that small little group, see how that works. And then if you need to grow it, grow it. I really wouldn't go above seven. Seven is, I have a client right now that I support. They have nine. And I, like, there's just days I want to pull my hair out because it's nine different opinions. And it gets a little frustrating because everybody, and it's great because everybody has great ideas, but you find that some of the personality clashes. And so you have this conversation. I'm like, oh, if I have to have this conversation one more time, I can't do it. I just can't. But so yeah, so start small and then and grow over time if you need to.
So you made me think about, you really have to make sure that you get the right people, right?
Oh,
And so
yes.
talk about how you, what kind of people you're looking for, how do you find them?
Absolutely. So, when I'm working with a client, it's usually, I just fill in as, CFO just because, as a financial person, just because that's my background. But I have actually worked with boards on the past in different positions. And like one, I'm like, oh, I'll be the secretary just so I can take notes. I love this. I can just sit. I want to be able to, immerse myself in the conversation, and I want to be able to make sure that we have good notes about what's happening in our meetings. So what I find is it could be a lot of trial and error. I won't lie. So you're going to want to lean towards the people you know. And to be honest, where growth comes from is being uncomfortable. So it's finding the people who are not the yes people that agree with everything you say, that support, and obviously you don't want somebody who hates you. That's not the goal either, but it's more about the independence. It's the somebody that can look in and, because they're going to have knowledge about your firm. I'm not going to lie. You're going to like pull back the kimono a little bit and you're going to share some information that's going to be a little tough. I mean, it will be tough to share, but what comes out of it is just so amazing because people, I mean, they just have their experience and you can't really bottle it and package it until you're in a meeting and you start to get to know people. So, I usually encourage people. When I was at KPMG, they forced us to go out and get board positions, and I couldn't quite make that happen for different reasons. But I ended up joining a committee with the United Way, so my local United Way chapter, and that started me with networking with other people in the community. So, people on, I mean, we had a couple bankers, insurance agents. Financial planners, you start to get to know these people and you're like, oh my gosh, you have great opinions. I like this. And so those are the places, like as you start to network, you start to find people that you would like to be working with more and having more conversations with.
All right, so when you're ready to approach someone like that, I've heard you mention that there's a certain way to approach them
Yeah.
about expectations and things like that. So will you talk about that for those that are thinking about giving this a try?
Absolutely. So when you start this, you need to have a couple things in mind. First, at least have your game plan of how often you're going to meet, what meetings are going to look like. So if you are just bound to determine you need to have in-person meetings and they have to be regimented, like the second Tuesday of every month at 8 a.m. It you like the more regimented you are, for whatever reason, and that's fine if you are, but be prepared up front before you approach anybody, because you don't want to get into and somebody says yes, and then they come back and they're like, oh, really? Like, I can't do Tuesdays at 8. That's the one time, it just doesn't work for me. So, just kind of have that game plan. What are you looking for? And really, I honestly find if you're just starting this and you start with your three to four people, probably once a quarter is the thing. And if they are all local, if you're going to have quarterly meetings, sit down, meet for breakfast, lunch, dinner. Those are easy conversations. Of course, those you want to temper with, having them in a location where it's, some semi-private, whether that's at a restaurant with a room, or you cater at your office, in the conference room and have, have a meal or whatever. But, just have the game plan of how often and what format, what that's going to look like. Then the next piece of it is your budget. So some people are going to come in and say, "Oh, four meetings a year, I'm in. Just buy me dinner and I'm happy. I am more than happy to mentor you, guide you, give you my opinions for the cost of a meal. Just that's all I want." Then you're going to have others who are going to come in and say, "Oh, well, I do this for a living and I need $500 a meeting," or whatever that is. So just be prepared of what your budget is, because you may have people who are interested, but you just don't have the budget for that. And that's fine. It's absolutely fine. It just takes time. But I will tell you, if your goal is to hit four people and you've got two, don't wait. Don't wait until you have the other two people. Just start moving and just say, "Look, here's the meeting. Let's get together, let's get rolling," and then keep actively looking for the additional people. And once you get those, then start approaching people and see where it goes from there.
So how do you handle when you're talking to these people, when you've approached them, how do you let them know about authority and kind of what to expect there?
So that again will be something that you'll probably decide in advance. And I don't have a template for this, but I kind of have, like, in my head the bullet points, and it's stuff like, talking about, sharing with them the information you're going to share with them, making sure they acknowledge there's confidentiality. So what you talk about in the room stays in the room. It doesn't, doesn't escape. And, setting up the expectations, I'm coming to you because I want you as a sounding board. I want to be able to share what I'm thinking in my head, and just kind of get your reaction and any guidance that you can help me get through whatever my current issue is. But just be aware that you, like, this is not a voting, it's not a voting position. There's not going to be, what is it? Is it the Roberts rules of something? I can't remember what that's called, but we're not going to do a formal roll call and, who's A's, I's, nays. We're not doing that. But I need to just be able to solicit what opinions are so I can make a better informed decision. I mean, that's what it's coming down to, is an informed decision. Would you get different viewpoints to help you with that?
Yeah, we may go forward with your idea or the board's idea, but at the end of the day, I have to make the final decision. And are you okay with that?
Yes, exactly.
Now, you mentioned something about, privacy and what happens during the meetings. Now, you have a recommendation around NDAs, right?
I have an NDA within my engagement letter. So anytime I'm working with a client, like, for me, it's a foregone conclusion. It just is. Like, I mean, what we talk about now, I do talk to other people. I will refer to situations, but, and I will make posts on social media like, "Hey, I had this conversation," but at no point can anybody ever come back to and figure out who that was. So,
So people
yeah, so
though,
there's,
so people
yeah.
that are on the advisory board though, you recommend that you
Yeah.
set up an NDA with
Yeah.
them, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're not going to have, so here's the thing. So I did say, yeah, you're going to pull back the kimono and you're going to share some information. I'm not going to lie, you're going to share your financials, but they're not going to have so much information. Like, this group of people, they will see your profit and loss, your P&L, but there's not enough detail on there
For them to
that
hurt you.
they would never
Yeah.
know who your clients are or your cases, unless they start, going to PACER or going to court records and start looking up filings where you're the attorney on record. If you're a litigator, I mean, so if you don't even litigate, that's not even, like, possible that they could figure out, certain things. So it's going to be a high enough level where they're not going to have details, but yet you don't want to be guarded in your conversations. So if you are in the middle of this conversation and you're having this great, great conversation, you're like, "Oh my gosh, this case just came in. You don't want to have to start, in your head thinking what you can't say because there's no expectation of privacy there. So that's where I do recommend NDA, but the information they're going to see, they're not going to be able to do anything with it. But it's just that comfort that you just don't want to get in a situation where you're in the middle of a conversation, you're like, oh, I don't think I can talk anymore. So
Yeah.
that's what I'm talking about.
Well, let's kind of finish up with one of the more important aspects, which is how would you measure the success of a board in this situation?
No, great question. So one thing that I've experienced often is you get so excited, you get your board, and then 5 years later you still have the same people. And I'm not sure that that's always a good thing. I'm a very big proponent at all levels of government, there should be term limits, and there's a reason. You want to be able to cycle and have different viewpoints, different opinions coming in. And I won't lie, there's been boards I've been part of that I'm like, no, I don't want this to change. This has been a great group of people, and I love meeting with you, and we do amazing things together. But honestly, it's best for the firm if you're, cycling through and having multiple opinions. I don't think that I would make it very regimented and saying, oh, every year you have to have a new group of people, but maybe go into it and just kind of check in at the end of a year and say, hey, are we still good? Do you want to keep going? People will have to, come and go for different reasons over time. But, to start off with, when you start with your very first meeting, start with your goals. What are your firm's goals? And, make sure that you're putting down on a piece of paper so that everybody on the board understands what your goals are. And there's no small goal, there's no big goal. Nothing's too big, nothing's too small, nothing's out of bounds. And it doesn't even need to be financial goals. You could have operational goals. And in all honesty, a lot of times, like literally, I would say 80% of the time, when somebody says, I want to increase my profit by 10%, and I'm like, okay, but really why? I'm like, well, because I want my kid to go to this college. I want to pay for it. And I'm like, okay. So most times, the goal, no matter how you say it, it's a personal goal, which is totally fine because you're a business owner. Okay. So once you sit down with your board at the beginning and you're like, okay, but here's my goals. Here's what I want to achieve out of this. I mean, just make sure that they're smart goals so that, they're specific, measurable, all those things. And, these are things where you're going to say, hey, look, guys, I'm struggling to increase my revenue. So my goal out of the next, we're going to meet for a year, for, 4 quarters. And by the end, I want to increase my revenue by 15%. That's what I need us to focus on. Don't let me get sidetracked because shiny object syndrome, and I'm like, ooh, there's a new book, and oh, did you see this? And I'm going to sign up for this program. Like, stop me from doing that. Make me focus on, keep me coming back to, you said the point of us meeting is your revenue goal, or is it that you want to increase your client satisfaction? There's or maybe you've gotten to the point where all of a sudden, I don't know why I keep coming back to this, but because I hate talking about COVID, but remember what happened 5 years ago when the world shut down. And well, most of the world shut down, but there were still some businesses that were operating, and most law firms, I mean, pause for like 2 seconds and then we're like, oh, nope, we're good. Just go home. Go home and work, we're fine. But certain practice areas stopped. Because so what about like personal injury? Well, you don't have slip and falls because nobody's in the store,
Yep.
and you have less accidents because nobody's on the road driving, and which is great from a personal perspective, from a human being perspective, that was great. But and that was the lag. I mean, it didn't happen overnight because you had those cases in process, but then the courts couldn't figure out where we can't meet in person, are we in Zoom? And you had that lull, right? So maybe one of your goals with your board is to figure out what's a complementary practice area. But those are the things, like set those goals with your board up front.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I'm such a fan of this approach, and I know that it'll work, is I actually had the pleasure of serving on an advisory board for 1 year for a large immigration law firm. And, what I loved about it is there really wasn't anyone else in there that had my perspective. So had gone to
Right.
business school and bought businesses and grown businesses over seven figures and sold businesses, and been trained professionally on TQM, total quality management, or process improvement, right? So I had all these perspectives that I could bring in, and it was unique to the other people at the table. So it made me excited to contribute, and I saw how it helped shaped the final decisions that the law firm ran with. So I have seen it. I know it's powerful. I highly recommend that. I mean, I'd love to see every one of our immigration law firms doing this because I just know how powerful it would be. So they might have some questions for you outside of what we talked about. So I want you to share with everyone how they could get a hold of you to talk to you about this a little bit more.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's just an amazing idea. And if you want to reach out to me, the best ways, so I've got my website. My firm name is Profit Scale Thrive. So the website is profitscalethrive.com. And it has, the ability to schedule an appointment with me. I'm more than happy. I don't charge for consultation. So, if you just want to jump on my calendar and chat through this, I'm more than happy to meet with you. And then my main social is LinkedIn. That's where I'm the most active. So if you want to search for me, and I'm pretty sure at least the last time I looked, I'm still the only Kelly Brubaker CPA. So hopefully I still have that. There are other Kelly Brubakers, but none Kelly Brubaker CPA. And Kelly is Kelley. So that does sometimes trip up people, but yeah, either jump to my website, jump on my calendar. I'm more than happy to talk through things, or follow me on LinkedIn. You can always DM me on LinkedIn as well, and I would love to be able to get somebody moving in the right direction, whether that's with me included on their advisory board or not. It's just like you said, it's just this wonderful idea. It doesn't need to be the Wall Street only club. This is something that everybody can use, and it really is a game changer for firms.
This could be a game changer for your immigration law firm. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah.
I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Scott. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
You can run your law firm with instincts, or you can run it with insight. One's going to keep you busy, the other one's going to make you unstoppable. Build your board, build your confidence, and build the practice you actually set out to create.